Hey everybody, this is Warboss Hinkle here from the Battle Brothers of the GCWA. We're here for a special first-time episode today where we got a new format we're doing that's done by our Florida specialist, John. Go ahead, John.
Why, thank you, sir. Yeah, so we want to do a tactics corner, so we're going to be calling this the Fog of War, and we're trying to lift the edges of that fog to give you a better idea of what different armies do, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and really just how you can play them more effectively on the battlefield. So for this first one, we're going to get started with an army that I've picked up here since their release this new year. You've heard me talk about it on the show, but we're going to be doing the Sons of Sanguinius, the Blood Angels, today. So we're going to quickly introduce everyone around the group. We've got one new guy joining the podcast. So,
hi, the Clint from Louisiana. OGP store.
And that guy, Scott.
Warball Sinkle here.
And this is John from Florida. So, are we ready to jump in?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it. I'm all about talking about the army of the Angel Dead Primarch.
Oh, hey, to be fair, it's the Twilight Army.
It's a good thing y'all are in Mississippi right now. It's a good thing y'all are in Mississippi right now.
That's a good way to start it. You know, my Primarch's still alive, so it's okay.
What are Primarchs?
Could be worse. Could be Dark Angels.
Yeah, we're talking about we're talking about Loyalist armies right now.
Though, yeah, we're good. We're talking about Loyalist. So,
if Puka was here, he'd hit us in the back of the head. All right.
All right. So I'm going to start this off with kind of the latest incarnation of the list that I've been running here recently. And then we're going to go in and we're kind of talk about the tactics I've been learning and developing to really make this effective. But I've started organizing my list in Battlescribe under the Unbound format so that I don't have to worry about mixing and matching. So I'm probably just going to go straight through with HQ's troops, elites, and so on. But currently I'm running at two battalions and a Outrider detachment. So I'm rocking, what is that, 10 command points to start with.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's what you're going to see as we go through this is the Blood Angels are a very, very command point intensive army. It pays off big time for you, but it's definitely one of those that you really need to get those command points up there to be effective. And talk to different players, some guys like Robert Chandler from Come the Apocalypse, he's working off a brigade, so he's going straight for 12 command points, and he's using all those he can. He makes some trade-offs like that I've discussed with him. He really likes scout bikers as opposed to me, who really likes Inceptors. But, you know, there's some good stuff all around. So let's just go ahead and jump in. I'm running the standard. He goes by many names, but Slam Gwinius, the Smash Captain, but the Death Company Captain. So Storm Shield, Thunderhammer, Jump Pack, the Angel's Wing, which is one of the relics we'll discuss later, and give him the Warlord trait, Artisan of War. So he's a damage 4 Thunderhammer on a Captain. And he'll almost always be given Death Visions of Sanguinius. So I'm burning one command point right off the bat, but it gives me a Death Company Captain, and Black Rage just gives you so many good perks. Just base off the bat, you get an additional attack off the charge, and you get a 6-up Feel No Pain. There's other stuff that you can tie into that with character buff or different characters that buff stuff, like Lamardes, Unleash Rage, which is a psychic power that is unique to Blood Angels, and some others. Hey, I've also...
I want to play dumb here for a second. You said you were burning a command point right off the bat. What for?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so... there's a stratagem, it's called Death Visions of Sanguinius, and basically what it does is that you can pick a non-primaris captain, lieutenant, chaplain, I think there's a few others on the list, but generally it's going to be a captain. It's a one command point stratagem, and when you use it, the captain picks up the Death Company keyword and gains Black Rage. So,
nice. Okay.
Yeah. So basically all those screaming berserkers in black that you see running across the table, in the Death Company, your Warlord is now one of those guys, and he gets the benefit and he gets the perks that give them all the extra attacks in close combat, the feel no pain, and then access to all these other special rules that the Death Company have.
And that has to be done before the game starts, and it lasts the entire game.
Right. It's when you're mustering your army. So it's one of those you just spend right off the bat. It's kind of like if you were going to pick up a second relic on your list, how you would spend the command point before the game even begins to put that into the list. Same basic concept for you.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Also have a second captain. He's going to be a regular guy. He's got a jump pack, plasma pistol, and a power sword. He's going to be jumping in accompanying my Inceptors, which I will talk about how I've got that little mini Death Star kitted later. Chief Librarian Mephiston, the dude's just awesome. I mean, he's almost an auto-include in most in Blood Angel lists. I mean, he's just such a good psyker.
Is he as good as the old 5th edition one? 5th edition, he was always taken.
It's probably very similar. It's kind of hard to compare between the editions, but he can go full on beast mode, and he'll tear through some stuff.
He's definitely high on the list for sure.
Yeah. I'd say probably 95% of the Blood Angels list are going to include him.
Agreed.
If not, they're going to throw in another. They're going to throw in another librarian. I mean, the Sanguinary Discipline is just really, really good to begin with. So you're almost doing yourself a disservice if you don't add in at least one librarian, and preferably Mephiston. I've got Lamardes. He gives reroll charges, reroll to hit for Death Company in close combat. Just a great character if you're running Death Company. Then I've got Sanguinary Priest with a bolt pistol, chainsword, and jump pack. So this one's actually kind of taken from the index as opposed to the Codex version. But he gives +1 strength to nearby Blood Angels units. And he also can potentially... He can also heal wounds every turn if he wants to. And on a 4+, he can bring back a slain model from a unit. Which I've done a few times for Inceptors, and that's just huge to get one of those guys back, especially if they're one of the plasma guys. The troop choices for the two battalions are pretty straightforward. I've got two squads of intercessors, 5-man each. They've got bolt rifles, and the sergeant has the auxiliary grenade launcher plus a chainsword. 3 units of scout squads, all bolters, and a space marine tactical squad. And I kind of put some extra upgrades on the sergeant, but nothing really too special. The meat of the list now. The elites, we've got a 10-man unit of Death Company, all with jump packs. They all have bolt guns, and half have chainswords and half have power swords. I'll discuss why I did power swords later, but the -3 AP I've found is actually very, very useful when you're fighting a lot of power armor guys. Sometimes the weight of attacks from the Death Company just doesn't do it, but power swords, you're still getting a lot of attacks.
Yeah, because it makes everyone pretty much have the save of an orc at that point if you're facing other Marines.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just absolutely will go right through most armor. Following behind them, I've got an 8-man unit of Sanguinary Guard, split even 4 and 4 between axes and swords. They all have the Angelus bolt guns, and I gave them the death mask. Now, there's some interesting things that you can do with the death mask, and Blood Angels can actually do some interesting negative leadership modifiers if you tag in some Reavers. And I think that's something I want to try at some point, but for right now, it's just handy because, I mean, you're probably going to be pairing the Sanguinary Guard and the Death Company up nearby, so you're going to be causing a lot of casualties. So having a -1 leadership on the unit nearby is, you know, what you don't kill in the close combat phase, you have a decent chance at routing in the morale phase. And looking at their weapons, pretty much all their weapons are the equivalent of force weapons. So they're really good at taking down big, sturdy targets. I've got some conflict in me about if they're really worth it, because looking between, you know, 10 or an 8-man Sanguinary Guard is 312 points. a 10-man death company is 220. Don't know if they're worth it. Sometimes they make their points back, sometimes they don't, but you know, still in the testing phase. And the last part of my list is three units of Inceptors. Two of the units have the assault bolters, and the other unit has the plasma exterminators. And the reason I've done that is the assault bolters are just 18-inch heavy bolters. So they're pumping out, 18 shots per unit. So strength 5, AP minus 1, 1 damage. I mean, it's just going to chew through most chaff and then probably a lot of infantry squads too, and can actually do some decent damage to, you know, light vehicles and stuff like that. The plasma exterminators, they are just there to deal with big targets. You know, your Magnus Mortarians, I don't know that they'll be able to completely take them out, but they'll definitely be able to put a hurt on them. And that second captain that I had, he's going to be joining up with this big blob of Inceptors that are coming down to just pretty much open up a second front for me in the game. So that's the list right there. That's what I'm working with. There's a lot of tweaks that I can make to it, but for the purposes of this, you know, tactics discussion, I'm going to really be kind of basing it all around this list or some slight variations of it. But I will be going into other good things that the Army can do. So just to quickly touch on some of the Army-wide rules for Blood Angels. Blood Angels have Red Thirst, so all infantry, bikers, and dreadnoughts get this rule. And what it essentially is a plus one to wound in the first round, or on a turn in which you charged or you were charged. So whether or not you're the aggressor, you get the plus one to wound when you swing. So that's all infantry, all bikes, all dreadnoughts. It's really good, and it means you're going to be wounding a lot of big stuff on fours, sometimes even threes. Black Rage, mentioned it earlier, you get plus one attack when you charge, and you pick up a Feel No Pain, and there's other army-wide rules that, or army buffs that will play into Black Rage. So just from what I've kind of seen playing the army, I used to start with a lot of stuff in Deep Strike, as you would kind of imagine. It's Blood Angels. They're all jump packs. You know, Deep Strike seems to be the natural place for them. Well, what I've found is that leaves you with very little stuff on the board to maintain board control, to block off Deep Strikers, to block off Infiltrators, and all that stuff. The Scouts do a pretty good job of controlling the mid-board, and they're usually one of the first units that I deploy. But it's really hard with five-man units to lock down, you know, a six-foot side piece of board. So what I've kind of started doing is that the troop options, they're all on the board. About half my characters are on the board, so it's usually going to be Mephiston and the Smash Captain that start on the board behind Scout, so the character rules protect them. And then I've started while we're playing with ITC rules, where, you know, bottom floor blocks line of sight, I'll stick the death company just as far up as I can inside a ruin on the bottom level and just hide them there. And Sanguinary Guard, I usually put on a flank to really kind of hold that down. They can usually hold their own. They're fairly tough at, you know, 2+ armor and 2 wounds. So I don't really have a whole lot to worry about with them dying off in a turn. They'll usually make it 2 to 3 rounds fairly easily. But what that lets me do is really control certainly my side of the board, but it also lets me push out into no man's land and really make him deal with my scouts before my opponent can bring in their reserves. So, you know, even with an army where you're trying to get up in their face and get in close combat quickly, you really want to do that on your terms, since, you know, we'll talk pros and cons as we go, but one of the big cons of Blood Angels is that so many of your really good units, like Death Company, are effectively just Marines with a 6+ Feel No Pain. And that can cause attrition rates to go very high very quickly if you're caught out of position. But so let's kind of get into, you know, how I would look at a first turn. So let's say that I'm going up against an opponent. They've got some screens out front, or Yeah, let's just go with they've got some screens out front. Let's say it's guard. And I really want to get back into their tanks in the backfield. Well, the screen has to go. Let's say that I draw first turn. One of the best stratagems that we have is a Death Company stratagem. It's called Forlorn Fury, and it's 2 command points. So for those 2 command points, it's done before the first battle round, so you're not actually in your turn. You can immediately make a move and advance with a Death Company unit. So what I've been doing is having that 10-man unit of Death Company do a move or do their Forlorn Fury and advance out, and they usually get, you know, probably about 16 inches out from their starting point into no man's land. And then the first turn starts, and I get my additional, my normal 12-inch move out. So I've already got them out 28 inches from my starting zone, and that lets them get into close combat with just about anything they want on turn one. And one of the guys I'm keeping in reserve is Lamardes, and his one of his 2 special rules for Death Company is that you can reroll charges with them. So if they're within 6 inches of Lamardes. So I deep strike him in behind those guys, and then I've got what's hopefully a pretty short charge with a reroll coming behind it. So one of the really good little ways of getting them up close very quickly. You can also do this with your Smash Captain, depending on what you're facing. Sometimes it's more beneficial to have him get up into close combat first and, you know, just go in there and just wreck face on someone that's back there. Kind of a downside to having him going in first is that he has a really good chance of dying to begin with because you're usually sending him after hard targets. If you're sending him alone, you have a really good chance of giving up Slay the Warlord fairly quickly. In my experience, it's usually going to be a worthwhile trade to remove some big unit that's, you know, 2 or 3 times his point cost. First game I played with Blood Angels, for instance, I weakened up Mortarion with some shooting, and then my Smash Captain came in and did 16 wounds worth of damage to Mortarion and finished him off. I mean, it was, you know, a combination of some good dice rolling on my part and some bad on the other guy's part, but you know, it still happened, and then he followed that up by taking out a Demon Prince in the next round of close combat. So I gave up Slay the Warlord, but he killed Mortarion and a Demon Prince. So it's going to be a tightrope in a lot of this, so a lot of risk reward, but it when the, you know, the risk pays off, the reward is very, very high. So hopefully that all made sense. Are y'all going good with me?
Yeah. I was shocked to hear, you know, you were able to actually go in and maybe it's just from my personal experience, but I've never seen like a Marine unit go in and take out Mortarion like that. I mean, I'm telling you, I've thrown my entire army at Mortarion before, and I just don't ever have that kind of luck. So that's great. You've come up with a combo like that. And just the way you're telling me how you can get a 28 inch head start like that, and the reroll right. The charge, that's freaking amazing.
Well, the 28 is on average, so it could be anywhere from 25 up to 30. So,
I mean, that's good to me. That's going to hurt. And like, to me, that's a big army that can go against Tau right there.
Oh, yeah. And not to get too off topic, but I mean, one of the great things about the Smash Captain, he's got the Angel's Wing, which is a relic that lets you reroll your charge distance, but you also ignore Overwatch. And with the leaks we've seen, or the previews we've seen from Tau, where the Tau Sept is going to be able to Overwatch on a 5+ for both the units that are being charged and the units that are supporting them with for the greater good, he just gets in there and completely ignores it. So at least one unit is going to be completely denied their Overwatch, which for Tau in this, you know, upcoming Codex is going to be, you know, paramount that you're able to do that. And that does hurt my Tau side, but at the same time, I'm like, this is fantastic that, you know, there is a hard counter to this, and it's going to be something that's going to cause a lot of people a lot of trouble. And it has. I mean, he's a very, very hard model to deal with. But yeah, so the Blade, I mean, so the Death Company are routinely getting into combat in my opponent's deployment zone on turn one. And that's just, that should be what they're doing every game. Following that up, I'm usually bringing the Sanguinary Guard, the Sanguinary Priest, all the Inceptors, and the second Captain. Those guys are all going to be coming in reserve. And the goal with those guys is that the Inceptors are going to really loosen up a flank and I'm going to go from hopefully having, you know, my deployment zone fairly secure, the midfield contested, and then drop this big unit of heavy firepower onto one of my opponent's flanks and just hopefully be able to roll that flank while he's dealing with Death Company and Sanguinary Guard in the middle of the field. For the most part, it works pretty well. It depends on what you're going against as to how effective it is, but it's really a good way to, you know, turn the tide of battle when you can isolate units and prevent them from helping one way or the other. When you force your opponent into hard decisions is where you really are able to make the most benefit.
Okay.
So,
well, I want to give our guest a chance to ask some questions on there too, because he plays in a different type of meta than, you know, we play here in Mississippi, in a different type of meta, which y'all play over there in Florida. So I'm kind of curious, Clint, what are the Blood Angel players in your area doing?
I guess first question, how many units are you deploying on the board again?
I'm going to have to go back to my list. Let's see, 1, 2, 8, 9. It's looking like 9, and then I've got 4.
And 3 of those are scouts.
3 of those are scouts, yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think it's looking like 9 and 7. 9 on the board, 7 off.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a pretty heavy drop army, but I've definitely got more that are starting on the board that can, you know, move up and respond to stuff. And one of the one of the things that is kind of helps with that is one of the stratagems is upon Wings of Fire, so you can basically pick up, instead of moving, you pick up a unit of jump pack guys, and you can remove them from the battlefield and then deep strike them anywhere 9 inches away from an opponent. So,
not bad.
Yeah. It seems to work pretty well, and then there's some combos that you can go into with that. But have you run into any players over in Louisiana they're doing? I know Adam Abramowitz is.
He's running them, and Haskell is running them also locally. So I played against like 3 or 4 different times. Adam's running the, I guess, with the elites are so heavily filled by Blood Angel, so he's running the fire raptors, the damn the tank. What's the big tank?
Sakarans.
Sakarans. He's packing some Sakarans for his backfield shooting. And I guess with the relic rule and the Blood Angels having extra elites, you get to kind of get around that, so to say, in a way. So, and then he's putting Mephiston in a drop pod. I guess getting him closer and then hiding behind the drop pod when he comes out. And then he casts a spell to move twice, I believe, is what he's doing, something like that.
Yeah. So Mephiston, one of the sanguinary powers is Wings of Sanguinius, and basically what that does is it gives you an automatic, or it gives you a free 12-inch movement, and you gain the fly keyword until your next psychic phase. So I think from what I've heard, just listening to the best general and then some conversations I've had with him, is he drops him in, like you said, uses the drop pod as, you know, his screen to prevent him from being shot, and then in a psychic phase, he casts Wings of Sanguinius, and then just hops over whatever screens are right there in front of them, and then charges into the backfield.
Correct.
Yeah, which I haven't had a chance to do that yet, but it sounds incredibly fun, and I really want to try that out.
and then Haskell's probably running something very similar to your list. He's running the scouts. He's running the Primaris troop. Was that Intercessor, I believe it is?
Intercessors.
He's using like them for like backfield objective grabbing and scouts before objective grabbing, and then the dropping in with the smash captain, and then Mephiston, and yep. I think he's got a big blob of the Death Guard, not Death Guard, the
Death Company.
Death Company, yeah. And then some the 2+ armor plate guys.
Sanguinary Guard, yeah.
That's them.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds very similar. Do you know if he's running the Inceptors too?
That's the heavy bolter dudes that drop
yeah.
in?
Yeah, he's running
2 squads of 3.
Okay. So, yeah, very similar.
Yeah.
And those
dudes are actually pretty decent because they come down and put a lot of firepower down, and then with the Blood Angel rule with the +1/2 wound roll, he'll even charge him in he'll do more wounds than what he should be doing to stuff. So,
and those guys even have the added benefit of I forget exactly what it's called. It's either Meteoric Descent or Crushing Impact or something like that. But when you charge in, you roll a dice for each guy in the unit. And if you roll a 6, you cause a mortal wound on the unit that you just charged. Yeah. So, I mean, additional mortal wounds are always a good thing.
Always good.
There's never a problem if you can cause mortal wounds. But, yeah, that's interesting to hear that, you know, you said his name was Haskell?
Yeah, Haskell.
Yeah, that's interesting that it's, you know, very, very similar, you know, list design and everything. But I'm glad that he likes the Inceptors as much as I do because they're one of my favorite units. Probably because they're the most Tau-like unit that Blood Angels have.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so going into it, I mean, there's two kind of ways that you can really look at going after your opponent. You can go with a big alpha strike. You bring everything in turn one, and you just try to get all of it into close combat as quickly as you can. And there's several ways that you can do this. I think I was counting it up when this first released, and there's probably about 4 ways that you can actually almost guarantee that you're getting units in there. So the first one I've already mentioned was the Forlorn Fury on the Death Company, and that's just, I mean, you really almost don't even need Lamardes for that. I mean, that's just easy turn one charges. The second one, upon Wings of Fire, which I mentioned earlier, you just pick it up, you deep strike it in somewhere else, and you pair that with Descent of Angels. So what Descent of Angels is a 2-point stratagem, and when you come in with that, you use it in your charge phase on a unit that arrived on the battlefield that turn, and they get to roll 3d6 for their charge distance instead of only 2 dice. So you're looking at an average of 10 to 11 inches that you can make for the charge, assuming that you roll average dice and everything. So that right there is really good. You should be able to, you know, break that 9-inch charge fairly consistently with Descent of Angels. Even if you don't use Upon Wings of Fire and you just want to drop something in and use Descent of Angels, that's still a very, very reliable way of getting into close combat. The other one we talked about, Wings of Sanguinius, you can use that on Mephiston or a drop pod or stuff like that, or coming out of a drop pod, or just, you know, moving him up the board, and then he's got a 7-inch move to begin with, so you move him 7, Wings of Sanguinius, another 12, you're 19 inches up the board, and depending on where your opponent deployed, you might have potentially a 5 or 6-inch charge to get into close combat with Mephiston. So some pretty good options there. I guess those are the 3 most reliable. Lamardes with Death Company gives out rerolls. Your Smash Captain is going to have rerolls because of the Angel's Wing. So you've got a lot of ways to really guarantee that you're getting into close combat on turn one. Now, the danger with that is that if you whiff your rolls, which I've done against a 4 Baneblade list, your entire army is just sitting out in the open. I mean, that's really the danger that you have with Blood Angels, is that you are just, at the end of the day, you are Marines. And Marines are a T4, 1 wound, 3+ armor save model. It's tough by infantry standards, but anything, you know, wants it, if something wants it to die, it's going to die. And that's really kind of what I found with Blood Angels, is that you want to get in, you want to get mixed up in close combat, because that's where you're going to be doing your most damage and you're going to be removing stuff. The other option that I've heard, as opposed to just an all-out alpha strike, is attacking in waves. So move the Death Company up on turn one, and let's say that you don't really have a whole lot of openings to bring the Sanguinary Guard in. Well, hold them for turn two, get the Death Company up, have them try to chew through as many units as they can and try to block off units' retreats in close combat. Scott, you were talking about Nick Nonavati's blog that he's been putting out, Brown Magic. And you remember when he was talking about pretty much his strategy for ensuring that he stayed locked in combat, right?
Yes, I do. The hostage, I think he called it.
Exactly. Yep. You just surround. I think he said that the minimum you need is
three models.
It's three models. If you get three models and you put them equidistant from each other around a single model, they can't escape because they would have to cross over your base. Now, obviously, this all goes out the window if you're trying to consolidate into something that has fly. So don't try to take a hostage that can fly.
Well, yeah, that or the base size of the enemy will also come into play because you're going to have to try and maintain coherency. And obviously, the bigger the hostage, the more models you'll require, which might not even be possible based on your pile-ins and consolidations and stuff like that.
Right. It's one of those a little bit more.
That's like, you know, sticking the landing Olympic style kind of thing. You have to have enough movement. You have to be in the right position. Your opponent has to be in the right spot. But if you can pull it off, then the reward is outstanding.
Yeah, because your close combat unit that wants to stay in close combat is staying in close combat, and he doesn't have to kill the hostage.
Yep.
So,
another trick you could do would be to, depending on the terrain, if there's like a vehicle or something that can't go through terrain and you can lock them next to terrain, same effect.
Yeah, exactly. I've done that with a Rhino before.
Yep.
I mean, it very, very, very handy. Like, you want your guys staying in close combat as much as possible. And even though they have fly, if they get into a situation they don't want to be in, you can just get out and they can still shoot. And the way that the Death Company and the Sanguinary Guard are set up, they are actually fairly proficient in the shooting phase, because you'll have, assuming no casualties are taken, once you get up the field with the Death Company, they've got 10 bolters, so they're going to have 20 shots with bolters coming in, which hitting on threes isn't bad. Let's say that you manage to get your captain up further up the field with them so that he's within six, and he's giving them the reroll ones, so you're going to be landing a lot of shots with bolters, and there's probably a pretty good chance that you're going to be able to clear off a lot of that chaff and get into some of the juicier units that are behind them. But let's see. Yeah,
go ahead.
Yep.
I was wondering, what do you think, from how many times have you played this at how many events?
Two or three at this point.
Biggest thing I'm curious about, John, what do you think? Are you ready for Conjet, or are we still talking on something else?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know that I could go and win a con yet, but
No. What I'm getting at is this. What do you think the cons are to Blood Angels? I mean, what is your weakness? What are you having a hard time?
Yeah, pros and cons.
Pros and cons. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying take this to like a major and win with it.
No. I'm curious to what you're having a hard time with this, because it sounds like an amazing list. But I saw, like, the last event you went to, I think you got, what, fourth place? Or second, even? I'm trying to figure out what's beating you.
Yeah, so the TBS events, it might just be two events I had. I think that might be right. But the first TBS Pensacola event that I went to, how did that go? Yeah, so I had two minor victories in my first two games. I beat I beat a Space Marine player with Primaris Marines. I beat a Demons player with Berserkers and some other stuff. That was actually pretty fun when the Berserkers and the Sanguinary Guard mixed it up. That was just a very, very bloody combat. And then the last game I played Jeff out of Panama City with his Gilliman Devastator line. And that was actually an interesting game that I really kind of fell down on my tactics in. I think I could have done a few things differently to really win, but that was a game where Death Company got into close combat with the Devastators on turn one, and most of them survived. But I, for whatever reason, I had in my mind that I needed to go kill the chapter ancient that had the banner of the Emperor Ascendant that lets them, you know, if they die, they get to shoot again or fight again. So I put a few guys into that guy, not realizing he had a 2+ save. So, I mean, that was on me, dumb mistake. What I should have done was just send them in there and clean, you know, clean out as many of the Devastators as I could and tie up as many of the other ones. But even going back further, I kind of, this was more of a tactics issue on my part. I got First Blood out of the game, and it was pretty much Emperor's Will. So we each sit on our objective, and at the end of the game, we tie unless we break the secondary objectives. So I got First Blood, and at that point, I probably should have just pulled everything back, deep struck my guys behind ruins in my deployment zone, and at that point just said, okay, well, you can't see any of my guys. You should come out and get me. I didn't do that. I kept trying to break into his castle, and it ended up with me getting tabled because I just crashed against his defenses and couldn't do anything. So tactics on that point was one that got me. This last event, I played two Chaos lists. One was a bunch of Screamers, and that was actually a fairly good counter to me just because his close combat was a lot better than my close combat, as frightening as that was. But he was running 3 units and 9 Screamers just to see what Screamers could do, and they do a lot in close combat. But lost that game. It wasn't really that close. I was able to control the board for most of the game, but towards the end, he had just eaten through all my guys. I played Adam in the second game, and that was actually a pretty interesting game because he had a 30 model blob of Bloodletters and a 30 blob of Pink Horrors. And I was actually able to slaughter the Bloodletters, and I think it was one round of combat between the Death Company and the Sanguinary Guard. So they just tore through them. And then the Pink Horrors actually survived a lot longer for some reason. But that came in the next turn. Their shooting was very, very subpar, and I was able to get into there. And then I won the last game at that one. So, I mean, I've had good results as far as tournaments go. I think I'm usually looking at around 2-1 in the two events that I've been in. And then I think there was another one that I was one. I feel like there was another event that I went 1-1-1 at, but I'm not sure on that. So right now it's the list is carrying me as I learn the tactics, because I think that I've taken some pretty good hints from you know, the community at large and some of the podcasts from the guys that love Blood Angels and been playing Blood Angels for a while. So I think I've kind of taken the best of that and then figuring out how the rest of it kind of goes together with my playstyle, because I'm coming from Tau. So, I mean, I don't have a psychic phase. I don't have a close combat phase other than, you know, wait till I can, you know, just hop back out with my battle suits and stuff. So this is a very, very different army than what I'm used to playing. So learning curve has been a little bit higher as I, you know, you figure out the maneuvering for close combat and the fight phase and all that. But
okay, John, we're coming up where we only got about 10 minutes left on this segment. So I kind of want to make the last 10 minutes where we kind of have a Q&A with me, Scott, and Clint.
I was just waiting for y'all to jump in throughout.
Oh, yep. Okay.
You just let me talk.
Well, you know, you do it so well, and I'm trying to get even better at my normal job outside of 40K to let people talk and not butt in as much, because it's a bad problem I have. So we'll go ahead and start off over here with Scott. What kind of questions, comments, anything you got for this QA?
Well, not so much a question, but going back to like what you were asking about the cons, to me it sounds like just the army itself lends itself more to alpha and beta strikes, and then you lose your momentum as the game goes up. I really don't know of any ways to fix that. Maybe just like in unit selection and general deployment. But as far as like the tactics and tricks that John was going over, it sounds more like a, you know, punch them hard first and mop up afterwards. Which, I mean, like, you know, it works. I mean, nothing's perfectly durable in 40K anymore, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good insight. That's, I mean, that's really one of the big issues I've had, is that towards the end of the game, even games that I've won fairly handily, because case in point, the last game of this little 1,500-point casual event last weekend, I was playing Gary Moore, who's running the Lost Knowledge GT, and he was doing Thousand Suns. Well, it was an objectives game from Chapter Approved, and I was sitting at, I think I was sitting at 20 victory points off of objectives, and he was somewhere around, you know, 5 or 6. But as the game got to the end, he had killed off everything that I had except for one unit of scouts. I mean, I literally had nothing left on the board, but I was winning on virtue of those first 2 to 3 turns. So that's one of the things that I've really struggled with, is making sure that that momentum stays up. And you're right, I don't really know where the, what's necessarily the right answer for that.
I don't think there is one. I mean, using the, like the buildings for line of light blocking and stuff like that, I think that can help, but I just think that's the way that 40K has gone, is that no army can hold out, you know, perfectly well. You don't see Land Raiders sitting in a corner anymore because nothing can hit the armor 14. You know, that's just, that's gone. So maybe, you know, I don't know, like maybe start incorporating armor might help.
Yeah, but like what Clint said. I mean, there the guys over in Louisiana are running, you know, Sakarans and some other tanks like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a pretty good way to maintain longevity and, you know. Oops, sorry, Clint.
No, you go.
But yeah, I mean, that would be a good way to, you know, maintain longevity in the game and keep up a pretty good fire base while you're at it. So.
And you talked about the Death Company, the Sanguinary Guard, the Assault Elements. Do they have any standouts as far as shooting goes, or is it just kind of standard Marine stuff?
For the most part, it's standard Marine stuff. I think the Inceptors are a pretty good ranged option, but, I mean, they're still more of a, they're still in the same vein as the rest of the guys. They're jump units that want to get in fairly close, and they don't have a problem charging. But, just kind of going through. I mean, one of the things that Robert Chandler is running is the Scout Bikers. So they've got the two, I forget what they're called. I guess it's effectively a Storm Bolter that they've got on the front, and then they've also got a shotgun that they're carrying, and they can fire all that. So each bike has 6 shots for, I think it's
75 points for 3 of them.
Yeah, so 75 points for 18 shots. So, and they've got a 16-inch movement where they can just, you know, that's faster than any of the jump troops. I mean, they can get it around to the board wherever they want to be. So,
yeah, I can tell you from finally trying out the Singing Spears with Eldar, the bikers with mass shots is pretty decent.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I guess the thing when it comes down to with a lot of armies is you want to be able to do 2 things really well. And the 2 things that I find that Blood Angels do the best are they're fast and able to get anywhere they want on the board, and they are devastating in close combat. So it's a close combat army that's not having to just try to run across the field. They actually have the tools to get where they need to go when they need to be there. And that's something that's been lacking from a lot of close combat armies, but it's something that Blood Angels do exceptionally well.
All right, Clint, go ahead. Any part of the Q&A you want to do now?
Yeah, I guess my biggest takeaway from playing against them is that goddamn hammer they have, man. That thing is a beast. 4 damage. I mean, it wrecks my face. And it took me getting beaten in the face with it one good time to realize how strong it was.
It's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, it is. And then the, I guess, other comments is, I found Blood Angels a very hard army to play. It'll smash face at mid-tables and low-tables because bad players won't know how to deploy against the Alpha Strike, and they'll get annihilated. And then it's the, but it's with the top tables where you really got to get your skills on point.
Right.
With the Alpha Strike and when to hold units back, when to bring them on, when to screen, when not to screen, and just And then the close combat is hard. It's difficult. Playing Custodes this last few months is for the first time I've actually ever playing an assault army. It's not as easy as you would think. It's a lot of stuff to learn. So
it's definitely been a pretty high learning curve, just from, you know, completely eschewing close combat to now having to, you know, really indulge myself in it. It's a very, very different play style than what I'm used to. But I mean, when it works, it's incredibly rewarding.
Oh yeah, I mean, and just kind of reading some of Nick's stuff he's been putting out the last few weeks. I would have never even thought about spending 3 command points to do one wound to one dude and kill it off and then consolidate into another unit. The command points that it would have costed just to move extra inches. I just would never even have thought about that. So,
right, yeah, I mean, as much of a premium as we put on command points, just you would think that burning 3 to effectively just move in and tie up, you know, a few units for an extra turn is, you know, I mean, is that really worth it? But, you know, his argument was great. I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, do you want Dark Reaper shooting at you or do you want them punching you?
Exactly.
I'll take them punching me all day long.
Oh, yeah. And then the other point I had, I seen another list that made high tables the tournament last week or two ago. I can't remember. Some GT. But anyhow, he ran smaller units of the jump pack of the Death Company. I'm not sure your thoughts on that instead of running the big one, big blob versus running like 4 or 5 units of like 5 man or something like that. I think he actually ran one big unit and then a bunch of small units, like 3 or 4 small units.
I think having multiple small units could work out. I mean, obviously if he had success with it, it worked out, but I think you really need the one big unit to go in there and tie stuff up.
Punch.
Yeah, but I can definitely see how you having a few extra small units to kind of go out and get some, like, let's say go get Rangers or something like that.
Right,
you don't want to send a 10-man unit of Death Company after Rangers, but you can send a 5-man after him to clear the board and, you know, clear the way for other stuff to come in behind him.
Yeah, that's the one Blood thing. Angels have the, what's it called, combat squatting?
They can, but Death Company aren't one of the ones that can do it.
Ah, okay, so outside of Death Company, I mean, I guess if you're using the regular assault marines, you could do it, but...
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, that's it.
Yeah, I think that's something me and Haskell were kind of talking about briefly, is he finds that big blob of Death Company drops down and just annihilates whoever they attack, and then they just get shot up the next turn. So it's kind of, you know, I guess you got to play them a little better, or maybe, you know, multiple units or something we were talking about.
Yeah, there was a... I know we're short on time here, but there was a battle report I saw from Mini Wargaming where Mini Wargaming Dave was running 2 units of Death Company. One was the big unit with the jump packs. The other one was on foot and a Land Raider, I think. But he equipped all those guys, the foot guys, with hand flamers. And so they're playing Tyranids, and he popped out of the Land Raider right in front of this big blob of Gaunts. And I can't remember how many, you know, shots he ended up getting on him, but I mean, he pretty much wiped a 30 model unit of Gaunts with Death Company hand flamers, which is a 1-point upgrade. I mean, it was just absolutely insane what they were able to do. But yeah, I mean, I can definitely see multiple, and that's multiple units of Death Company being good, even smaller units. And you know, talking with Adam, that was one of the things that he does. Like, he doesn't like the Sanguinary Guard at all. He thinks they're too expensive, which I'm kind of starting to come to his side of the argument with that, but I could definitely see, you know, substituting in a second unit of Death Company equipped a little bit differently and just having, you know, 2 big groups that are moving up the field or deep striking in, or, you know, just being generally where they need to be.
Is that all you had, Clint?
That's it.
All right. So my question here, John, is and hopefully we won't have to test it this weekend. But I have a question about my list to yours. It's the same list we've been talking about for ATC.
So, let's do it.
So if I shut down your psychic ability, how effective is your army still?
It's still effective. It limits Mephiston a good bit, but I've run into games where, you know, it's going up against a psyker heavy list and his psychic power is just don't do anything. They just get shut down. fortunately, most of the stuff that gets me across the board is only contingent on stratagems and command points. Now, if you can shut down the psychic powers, you're definitely hamstringing me in a couple areas, because there's some other good stuff that Mephiston can do. One of his psychic powers gives additional attacks to the Death Company. If you shut that down, then it becomes a huge nuisance to me, but at the same time, it's not necessarily game breaking. It doesn't necessarily break my game plan wide open.
Go ahead.
What I would be more concerned with in your list is the shield captains getting in and doing a lot of damage to the Death Company, or particularly the Sanguinary Guard, before I've had a chance to really attack you in close combat. I think that's going to be where your money's made, is just shooting them up before they really have a chance. And I'm going to be able to get across the board most likely, but if you can get that first punch in against the Death Company or against the Sanguinary Guard, then, and you can knock them down a few models, a Sanguinary Guard is roughly 35 points apiece. You kill one of those guys, you're actually putting a pretty big hurt on the unit. So
the other question I had, outside of shutting down the psychic powers, my list is slat full of snipers. I'm guessing Mephiston's my primary target.
I think Clint would agree with me on this, that the Smash Captain's probably your number one target.
Smash Captain, that's the Primaris Captain, right?
No, he's not a Primaris Captain.
That's the guy with the 4 damage hammer.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy that he's got, Thunderhammer, Storm Shield. He is going to be getting up. He's going to try to be getting into close combat with your shield captains. And
The problem with him, I played his matchup twice now, is he swings in, every damage kills a regular biker. I mean, every damage he gets through just kills a regular biker because he's doing 4 damage. And then on top of that, every 2 damage kills a captain. So he just eats up whatever you got for breakfast. You got to kill that guy.
Yeah, anything that gets through the invulnerable saves with him is going to be probably killing something. Okay.
I will tell you this. I had a shield captain in Terminator armor who took a charge from – he's my warlord. He had a 3-plus invul and the Feel No Pain. He took a charge from the full Death Company, and he survived by himself. Like, he was the only guy they attacked, and they didn't do anything. He still had 2 wounds left when they were done. So he can take a beating, that's for sure.
Well, that's good. So, I mean, that's the only advantage I see that I have going up against a list like that, John. Sure, melee-wise, you kill me, but being able to shut down some psychic stuff, take out some characters or snipers, I think my shooting power is probably a little more heavy than yours. Because I have tons of bikes. But I think if you tie me up, it's going to put me in a bind.
Well, I think that's what one of the things John was saying, though. Like, your bikers, if you charge, John's going to be in a bad spot.
Ultimately, two assault armies,
it's going to come down. And especially since you're running custodies, that's the stooping dive stratagem. That could really screw over John or someone similar, because you could swoop in with a unit of your bikes and attack first, and you could really neuter his charge or his charge on that turn. So always remember, like, you like custodies especially, you have just as many stratagems, if not more, that you can use. So,
and you have just as much mobility as I do. So,
arguably more.
Arguably, with or without the presence of, you know, stratagems and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those that, like, it gets back to the weakness of Blood Angels, that at the end of the day, while they have all this crazy close combat stuff, most of them are just simply Marines. And that is what is built around, the list is built around. And this actually, your question on snipers actually brings up another point. It is very character dependent. A lot of the good buffs you get come from the characters. So, my little Inceptor Death Star, it really hinges on that captain, because I'm going to be overcharging the plasma or supercharging the plasma. And, you know, they've got 2d3 shots for each of them. So there's a really good chance that you can just straight kill off your entire squad if you don't have reroll ones. Lamardes.
Who's the guy that gets reroll charges?
Lamardes.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a Death Company chaplain. He lets you reroll charges, and then if he's within 6 inches of you when you're in close combat, you're rerolling hits in close combat. So he is, you know, very important to the overall strategy. Mephiston, same thing. He can kind of be his own one-man army and all that, but at the same time, he can hand out benefits. He can, buff the Death Company. He can do all sorts of other stuff. Just supporting the army. And then you look at, my list in particular, you've got the Sanguinary Priest. He gives out +1 strength to units. So for something like Sanguinary Guard, like let's say that they're going up against let's just say they're going up against regular Marines. So with swords, they're only strength 4, but you have the Priest nearby, they get +1, so they're wounding on 3s. Natively, and then you have Red Thirst, they're wounding on 2, so they're getting a pretty substantial benefit just from that. And let's take it a step further and say that you're going to be fighting against a knight, so toughness 8. Base for the Sanguinary Guard is 4, so they'd naturally be wounding on 6s, +1 if it was if they charged. But you have the Priest nearby, they get +1, so now they're natively wounding on 5s. Wounding on 4s with Red Thirst with swords. So, and that gives them, and that's at a -3. So you just went from, not very reliable to literally a coin toss on being able to damage these guys. So, like having that guy around is just a really, really strong force multiplier. And this is just scratching the surface. I mean, you've got stuff like the Sanguinor that gives an additional attack to everyone within 6 inches of him. There's a lot of stuff out there that's, really, really beneficial to have in a Blood Angels list. But the downside is they're usually tied up on a single character model. And so if you remove that character, which granted, they're very tough in most situations, but if you remove that character model, then you have seriously neutered what the list is able to do. So not only do you want to be aggressive with your characters, you have to be a little bit cagey and protect them from being overexposed to the enemy's fire. So,
we need to go ahead and close up here in a minute, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're up to the end of our time limit.
I don't believe in time.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things we're trying to promise our guests is keep our segments about an hour long. So.
That works.
If you want to go ahead and do any closing statements, and I also want to get one from Clint. Thank you for coming on the show today. And anything you want to say before we close up, Clint?
No problem. I enjoyed it. Hopefully, we can do it again soon.
All right, Scott, first episode of the kind of go with our fog of and climate and all of our weatherman activities in 40K.
I think it's pretty solid. I'm looking forward to doing this for more. Getting more people on, that are subject matter experts. I think it'll be good. Kind of spread the word.
John, I think this is a great idea you brought up to do this. I think it's going to bring a lot more different type of style to how we do our podcast, get some more episodes in, but also something people will want to come back and listen to this episode, 6-7 months down the road, because it has to deal just with their army. So that's off to you on that.
Well, thanks. I mean, ultimately, that's my goal is I want to spark discussions on different armies, and I appreciate y'all letting me talk. But I mean, really what I want going forward is this to be, an open dialogue where, I might be leading it this week, but you're jumping in with questions and, things where my logic might sound good to me, but then you catch something, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What if this happens? Then that entire thing falls apart, because that helps me go back and refine what I'm seeing in the game and things that I might not have thought up before.
So my recommendation on that then, John, is here's what I would do after each, like say you talk about an HQ, any questions on that, y'all? and then go to the next unit. You fluidly went from one thing to the next. I would almost say that might be something we do with the show going forward is after you finish talking about an HQ or a troop unit, let's discuss it on that.
Okay.
It's just an idea. Because some people, we don't want to cut in on you while you're talking and stuff. And that's something we can learn from this. Well, if we're wanting to have that interaction between each thing, I think that's probably the best way to do it. So we're not all yelling at the same time.
Right. And that's something we can get feedback on after this goes out. So, I mean, hey, if you're all listening to this podcast now, drop us a line. I mean, do you like just the fluid talking through? Do you want to have more questions asked during, the opening discussion?
Or do you want us to yell at each other?
Yeah.
Rabble.
But I'm looking forward to this. I had a really good time tonight. It was fun it was fun preparing for it and really putting thoughts to paper and trying to take a logical look at this army that I've always loved in the background, but is very, very new for me on the tabletop. It's been a fun month so far running this. It's been nice to try something that's very different from what I'm used to. So I highly encourage everyone out there, if you don't have a second army, assuming, if you can try to get some games in with something that's, radically different from what you have, go for it. I think it'll make you a better player. I know I certainly know how to do the assault phase much, much better than I did before, where I pretty much just asked how many wounds I was taking and then started picking up models. So, I'm looking forward to this going forward. Hopefully we'll be doing Tau here soon. I don't know which one will be the next one, but I'm looking forward to my main squeeze coming out.
Boo to Tau.
Ooh.
Come on.
I'm not looking forward to them being good.
There's only going to be three commanders.
Oh, well.
that's better than
99 Riptides, I guess.
Yeah, well, commanders are going to be real cheap on eBay right now.
Riptides are going to be so obnoxious now.
I know.
It's going to be fantastic. But, yes, also, but let us know what armies you want to hear from. We've pretty much got every major army covered along the Gulf Coast. So if you want to hear about tactics for one, if you want us to throw us a list and us to try to break it down and see how we would play it or what the weaknesses are, let's do that too.
I didn't even think about that, John. That's actually a great idea. On top of doing tactics, have people get on here and let's just break apart their list. That's a real good thing too.
Well, as long as they cover shipping, then I'll bring a hammer.
All right. Well, I think that's all I got. But yeah, folks, just give us your feedback. Like, let us know if you like this, what you want to see, and we'll try to oblige.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and close up after that. Thank all y'all for coming on the show today. I hope your listeners out there enjoyed this first episode of The Fog of War, and we look forward to seeing y'all in the next episode. This is War Boss Ankle, signing out.